Welcome to Sideline Judgment. My name is Sergio.
My name is Tyler.
And today we will be talking about the Villanova Wildcats, the 2016, 2018, 2019, 2020, 2021, and maybe 2022 national champions, because it's looking like it's the dynasty right now. Tyler, Villanova hit the threes.
They hit all the threes.
Did you expect them to win? Did you call it? Is what I want to know.
If you remember, on this very podcast.
Careful what you say, because we have evidence, my friend.
No, okay. On this podcast, last week, I picked them to win.
Correct.
I picked them to win the national championship. Okay. So, like, before you come fully at me.
My guns are swinging. My guns are blazing.
See, I was always more of a, I thought they were going to lose early.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not surprised that they won late. I felt that of the teams left, they were gonna clean house with both of them.
We did say that, yeah.
Yeah, and I agreed with that, and I could just put that out there.
Okay.
But I don't think I'll ever be able to talk about basketball ever again.
Ever. Cool. So anytime we talk basketball, I'll just bring Michael or Courtney on, and it'll be sideline judgment with Sergio and Courtney, or Sergio and Michael.
Never do that, because that's the one thing that can't happen. If Michael and Courtney come on this podcast, I will never be allowed to say anything about basketball.
Okay, I'd like to inform you, they're going to come on this podcast again, and yeah, we're going to mention it. It's going to happen.
Dude. You're right.
But let's go ahead and hold off the title winners for now. Let's go ahead and hit the rewind button. Let's go back to pastime, crazy, months ago, talking March 31st, the end of March. We are going to be talking about the two Final Four games. Let's start with the first game that happened. Our Ramblers of Loyola Chicago fell to the hands of the Michigan Wolverines, and Mo Wagner, giving my prediction the truth, 24 points, 15 rebounds. The man joins a group with only two other players in NCAA history. He joins a group of at least 20 and 15 points.
I'm looking at the bold prediction right now.
Yeah, look at the bold predictions. Didn't I get it?
Yeah, he had 20 points and 10 boards.
That's what I said would happen, and he had 24 and 15. What was your prediction for this game?
My prediction was that he would foul out.
Which he did not. He almost did. He had four fouls.
All right. I'm taking a moral victory.
We'll take a moral victory there. Speaking of moral victories, Loyola was up at halftime, 29-22. It looked like this game was going to go Loyola's way. It really wasn't.
Go ahead. They had it. I feel like the final score is such a lie for this game.
Right.
Because it's Michigan, in the end, won 69-57.
Mm-hmm.
A 12-point victory. But Loyola had a pretty substantial lead at a certain point. Like, mm-hmm. Loyola played very well, I think.
Yeah.
I just think that they matched up against a team that did exactly what they did.
Mm-hmm.
And they had the same exact style, but they played with better athletes.
Right.
So I think that Loyola kind of just ran out of gas.
Yeah.
And they played very well, and they only attempted 10 threes the whole game.
And they made one.
And then, yeah, and it's just like only attempting 10 threes again,
right,
when you have as many great guards as they do.
Mm-hmm.
Really testament to Michigan's defense.
One thing about Michigan's defense is they sealed the perimeter and they forced Loyola to come inside. They basically gave them the lane, mm-hmm. and they said, that's fine, take your 2 points, but we're going to seal your 3-point shooting. Kind of like what the mentality against Villanova should be. But obviously, Loyola does not have the athletes and the talent that Villanova has, so they're not going to be hitting an absurd amount of threes, which we'll get to in a moment.
You saw that strategy, the basis of that strategy always for any team that it faces, mm-hmm. is that you're going to fall to an early deficit.
Yeah.
But the idea is that you can lock it up late.
Exactly.
Because later in the game is when driving doesn't work as much, and mm-hmm. shoot it, you need to be able to shoot well. But when you've locked down basically both then,
right.
That's exactly what happened to Michigan.
Mm-hmm.
That Loyola took advantage of it really early, but then it came back to bite them.
Right.
But it was a great, great game. Mm-hmm. Very good. Yeah, very, very good game. Very fun game to watch. I was more upset than anything. It's not that Loyola lost. Mm-hmm. Not that our Ramblers lost. But that I couldn't watch our Ramblers play any more basketball. It wasn't, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, I get that.
They were so fun to watch.
Yeah, they were. They were a team that yes, they were the Cinderella because they were the 11th seed. But if we're being honest, if this team came out of the Big Ten, was a mid Big Ten team, a lower Big mm-hmm. Ten team, if that team came out of the Big 12 or the lower end of the Big 12, we would see that as acceptable. Like this team was a good basketball team. We fell in love with them not only because of the story, because Sister Jean is everyone's favorite grandmother, because They played
she's
smart.
She's a nun, so she's nobody's grandmother.
Actually, but she could be everyone's grandmother because she's a child of God. So,
all right.
happy Easter, my friend. No, because we fell in love with everything, the narrative, the story, and not only that, but they played really good basketball.
Oh, like, they played really, it wasn't a fluke. They deserved to be there.
They crunched out some close games in the first few rounds, but then they proved it against Kansas State when they said, no, we're here to stay. I was listening to One Shining Podcast, shout out to them, great podcast, we love them. And they were mentioning, they said that they think it was better that Loyola Chicago was eliminated in the Final Four rather than making it to the title game and losing in the title game. Because, let's be real, if they made it to the title game, Villanova was blowing them out, you know? So
yeah, I mean,
it was a matter of what is better for the narrative? What is better for the story? What's the legacy look like? Do you agree with that, or do you would you have liked to have seen them one more time?
I mean, I would have liked to have seen them one more time, just me right now saying that, like, they were super fun to watch and I wanted to see them again.
Right.
But I would actually argue that I don't think it really matters. Because the legacy of teams that go to the Final Four is either you're in the Final Four...
Or you're not.
Or you win the championship.
Right.
So, like, nobody remember, like, when we talk about, like, the 2000 Florida Gators, yeah. they lost in the national championship.
The Mike Miller team?
Yeah, the Mike Miller team lost in the national championship to Michigan State. But when you talk about them, you just talk about that Final Four team.
Well, the banner is what's in
there. Yeah, the banner is what you get. You don't get national runner-up, even though that's what you are.
Right.
You get the banner, or you win it. So I don't personally think it mattered as much. I just wanted to see them one more time because I love watching them play. I love their style of basketball.
But yeah, it was an otherwise. Other than that, it was kind of Michigan dominant. I mean, Mo Wagner lived on the boards. He had 15 rebounds. He went 10 for 16, and he went 3 for 7 from the three, which is not a bad 3-point shooting percentage. It was very. I don't know, this game was very exciting in the beginning, and then there was that stretch at the end of the game where Loyola had 4 straight turnovers, and it just seemed like that killed the game.
Then there was the play that
Michigan took one of the turnovers, had a fast break, moved the ball around the perimeter, there was a corner three that I don't know who took, they missed it, and then Mo Wagner went up, got the rebound, dunked it, and then also got the foul, hit the free throw, and to me, that was a dagger in the game. There were about 4 minutes left in the game, and that took them from like a 6-point lead to a 9-point lead, and right then and there is when Michigan just put the foot on the gas and just put them down. That's what gave it a 12-point victory to Michigan, 69-57.
Yeah.
I guess a moment of silence for our Ramblers? All right, thank you.
Our Ramblers. May they rest in peace forever.
May they rest in peace until next year, because this team... It's exciting, and I hope that they bring back a lot of... I know there's 2 players graduating.
Richardson is graduating. Right. I'm not sure who else. Speaking of Richardson, one of their guards, he's a senior. I saw probably my favorite moment of the tournament. It's a video of him walking to the locker room after the game. And crying because they lost.
Yeah.
Which
head
coach Porter Moser comes up to him and he says, "You hold your head high because you changed the direction of this program."
True.
And every time I watch that, I'm like tearing up because like
it means so much.
But like to see the coach go and be like, you don't feel bad about this.
Yeah.
Like you do not have an ounce of shame for what you put out there because like. The whole reason that we're here is because of you.
And I agree with that. It reminds me of the Mo Bamba going up to Shaka Smart, interrupting his media availability, and Shaka Smart just hugging him and saying, "This is forever. Don't forget that." Because, you know, Mo Bamba knew he was going to declare for the draft. Mm-hmm. But that's that moment, you know? It's nice. It's nice to see the love for the school and the love for the institution is still there and wanting to deliver it to this group of people, you know. It's that authenticity of college sports that oftentimes we're missing nowadays because we're in the one-and-done era and we're in the paying our athletes.
It's good to see that even when it hurts so much, you can see what it means.
Yeah. This Loyola Chicago team should hold their heads high. They
should not be ashamed of it.
No, at all.
Thing.
No, in 50 years, we're going to talk about not only is this – we talk about the George Mason run. We talk about the VCU run. But what sets these teams apart from those teams apart from this Loyola team is that Loyola deserved to be there. They didn't get there through some fluke stuff. They didn't come up against teams that didn't play well. they played good basketball and they held their own, and they should be proud of that.
Yeah.
That's the obituary to our Ramblers. Let's go ahead and move on to, honestly, a game that was supposed to be the best game of the tournament and ended up just being a blowout, which with some good coaching involved, which we'll get into. Kansas fell to Villanova 95-79, and honestly, the score doesn't do it justice. It should have been a bigger margin of victory. I mean, it was. Well,
let's look at the predictions real quick.
Oh, okay, yes.
You predicted that Mikal Bridges would have 25 points and shoot 50% from three.
Mikal Bridges had 10 points and shot technically 1,000% from three because he didn't take a three.
Okay, cool.
So
I was way more right.
What was yours?
Well, actually, I was right on one of them. I had two bold predictions. My first bold prediction is that Devontae Graham would have over 20 points, which he did.
Uh-huh.
He had 23, I believe.
Let me check. I'll do the stat check on the 23 points, yes.
And I said it would go to overtime because I thought this game would be a lot closer than it was.
Yeah, we both thought this would be a close game. We anticipated this, again, like I said, to be the best game of the tournament, and it did not turn out that way. So it turns out Villanova's three is really good. Turns out they're consistent. Turns out they have a lot of hot hands. And turns out that they don't miss. Remember when we talked about live and die by the three?
Yeah.
They are living by the three. Living their best life by the three.
Yeah.
This team was ridiculous. Tyler and I were texting back and forth and talking about how we did not understand how this team...
Well, it didn't make sense because, like, they're just...
At all.
They're hacking up these threes from these weird angles and from these deep distances that, like Kansas is forcing them into the last, like, 6 seconds of the shot clock.
Kansas was doing the right things.
And then it's just like, you know what, screw it. And then Jalen Brunson just pops up a three.
I'm going to pull up. And it just ridiculous. Goes right through.
Absolutely ridiculous.
They went 12 for 20 from the three-point line in the first 15 minutes of the game. They broke the NCAA three-point record by halftime. And if you looked at their... If you look at their shot clock, some point in the second half, they were 13 of 26. They were shooting 50% from three.
Damn.
This team is insane. It's ridiculous. And when you look at
is it Warriors-esque?
It's Rockets-esque.
Okay.
Because like the thing with the Warriors is that the Warriors play a style of basketball that was a joke that Tyler was making where he was making fun of people comparing Villanova to
any team that any team in basketball that hits threes compares on a consistent basis compares to the Warriors.
Which should be an honor to the Warriors because they revolutionized that style of basketball.
No, it is in a way, but it's also just kind of a dig.
Exactly, yeah. See, the way the Warriors play is that they have basically four guys who can shoot at all points and Zaza Pachulia. And so what they do is they move the basketball, they play this kind of, and I'll make this comparison when we talk, we're going to talk some soccer today, by the way. When we talk some soccer with Pep Guardiola's Manchester City, it's called total football, where like it's kind of positionless football, and it's more moving towards the ball moving towards the ball and finding the open space. Mm-hmm. That's kind of what the Warriors do on the floor. They find the open space and they move around. What the Rockets do is they kind of put the ball through one or two dominant guards. Their other players can shoot threes, but it's more of I'm going to spread things out, isolate. When James Harden can get to the hole, he's going to do it. And when not, he's going to push it out to someone who's wide open. And they have great three-point shooters. Mm-hmm. That's kind of what this Villanova team did. You know, Jalen Brunson was kind of take the ball down. If he had an open lane and he had something down there, he would kind of post up to them because he's a point guard who can post up with people. And if not, he would kind of just make open, separate space, take three if it's open, and if not, find the open player and just knock it down, you know?
Yep.
It's a very avant-garde way of playing basketball that's been trending in the past few years.
Yeah. And they just do it better than everybody else.
And they just do it better. Yeah, they just have better players, better talent, you know? I really don't have much to say about this game than we've already said, except for the fact that hats off to Bill Self. Because there was one point in the beginning of the game where Bill Self realized he was getting beat and he made a defensive adjustment and Villanova started to pull up shots and not make them. They were forced to take bad shots rather than just making the bad shots. They started missing them because law of averages, you're going to miss a few shots. And Kansas took advantage of that situation and they played ISO ball. Spellman decided to go ahead and take it to the hole. Not Spellman. Oh my God. Devontae Graham decided to go ahead and take it to the hole and he played good basketball. You know, they gave him the lane and he took it and they got quick points and they went on like a 7-0 run. to cut it to like a 12-point deficit.
Okay, yeah, but okay. I will be I'm going to be the first one to say this. 12-point deficits, like when a team is on a run, 12-point deficit feels like nothing, because that's at the very least it's a it's a four possession game.
If you're Villanova, yeah, I was about to say for the Warriors. If you're Villanova,
well, like, that's the thing, is that like, it seems like a lot, but 12 points is actually very easily, like...
Correct.
Very overcomable.
Correct, but the fact that there were 12 minutes left in the first half, and they went on a run, and they were still down 12, just showed a testament as to what the... how Villanova was just hitting shots, you know?
Yeah, it was... I don't think Kansas necessarily played a bad game of basketball. Mm-hmm. I just think that they ran out of firepower.
Yeah.
They just don't have the firepower.
You couldn't go toe-to-toe with them.
And Kansas, yeah, it was playing the percentages. It was playing the just make them take bad threes. Mm-hmm. Make them take threes, because they're just – it's just the statistics tell you that that's the smartest way to go. Right. But when you're Villanova, apparently that doesn't apply to you. So.
And they were down 15, and they were down 15 at halftime. And the whole thought was, okay, you're down 15. Let's go on a run at the beginning. And then we can kind of get back into the game throughout the game. You know, just kind of crawl, pick away at the lead, play good defense, pick away at the lead so that you're in a position to win it within the last 2 minutes. But Villanova came out and went on a run at the beginning of the second half, and Bill Self was forced to take a timeout 2 minutes into the second half.
Yeah, I did
see that. When that happens, it's over, you know?
Yeah.
Anything else to say about this Final Four game?
It was not as good as the one that was before it.
Correct.
So there's that.
There is that.
I was severely uninterested in the second half.
Mm-hmm.
Which that's how the cookie crumbles sometimes.
Yeah. But, yeah, I feel you.
It happens.
All right, we're going to go ahead and move on to last night's national championship game. We're recording this on a Tuesday. Villanova 79, Michigan 62. And this game was over 8 minutes left in the first half? Around there? Because Michigan started hot, and Mo Wagner started hot, too.
I'm going to say, maybe eight, maybe closer to like seven, like six, seven. We're splitting hairs at this point.
Yeah,
but it doesn't really matter. This game, this was a game for a quarter of the game.
Exactly. Yeah, about 10 minutes in the game, this was a game. Well, because Michigan started, like I said, Michigan started hot. They were getting shots in, and it seemed like they were gonna, you know, things were gonna balance out. Villanova was gonna hit their threes, and then they were gonna play good defense. Like, Michigan is a good defensive team. And then Jay Wright said, "You know what? I got the National Player of the Year, Jalen Brunson. But you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to sit him down. I'm going to bring in this guy, sixth man of the year,
Dante DiVincenzo.
DiVincenzo, there we go.
I know how to say that.
It takes me a second, all right? It takes me a second. Dante DiVincenzo, who went off. He finished the game with a career-high 31 points. He outscored all of Michigan 18-14 in the last, like, 10 minutes of the first half.
Yeah.
He was shooting everything. He had a great vision for the court, great vision on the floor, and basically took over the game himself and decided it's Dante time.
He also winked at the camera.
Like a boss.
Yeah, there's a shot of him hacking up a three and turning around, running back up the court and winking right at the
Steph
camera.
Steph Curry-esque.
Oh, it was beautiful. The moment it happened, I tweeted. I was like, I need that in GIF form right now.
We need to find it.
And, friend of the program, I assume. Now.
Sure enough.
She's friend now.
Yeah.
Made, like, immediately sent to me.
Yeah. I mean, I honestly, it's just more Villanova being Villanova. They can hit threes.
I mean, they blew them out.
Yeah.
And, I mean, surprisingly, it's only a 17-point lead, which, like, when I think blowout in basketball, I'm assuming, like, you got to eclipse 20.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, this was a blowout.
But if we're being real, they could have just put up another three and done it.
Oh, yeah. Like, Pity points.
Exactly.
Villanova wins their second championship
in 3 years. They become the fourth program
to do so
in the last since 1990 to do so, joining Duke's 91-92 back-to-back years, Kentucky's 96 and 98 championships, and the Florida back-to-back 06-07 championships. Mm-hmm. So, congrats to Villanova. Congrats to Jay Wright, the most handsome man above 40. No offense, Dad. But the most handsome.
Can we
man
talk about his salt and pepper hair?
Can we talk
we
about it?
We talked about it last week.
Because, like, I have a little bit of salt and pepper here, but, like, not clearly at that age or whatever, but I'm just hoping this evolves to become that.
God,
he's wearing his Armani suits.
But, like, oh, he looks so good. He's
a
fine man.
He's a fine man.
Other beautiful things. Favorite thing about Final Four, personally, for me, is that they do this a lot because the court is really wide. They have.
Which I have my opinions about. Go ahead.
Okay. Which everybody can have their opinions about. The one thing I love about it, and I love they do in the Final Four, is they try different camera shots. That low tracking dolly shot.
When the point guard takes the ball out and it follows him from the low angle.
It's the most beautiful shot in basketball,
cool.
in my opinion.
Yeah, it's a cool vibe. Because then you get the whole crowd behind it.
Yeah, but it's just cool to like. It's very cinematic to see him like to move with him as he brings the ball out. It's beautiful.
It's like
watching, like a movie stuff.
It's like I'm watching White Man Can't Jump. It's great.
Something like that.
Yeah. But yeah, I really don't have much to say except for we were going to mention this. Jalen Brunson won AP Player of the Year. But we have the argument that he's not even the best player on his own team.
Yeah.
We actually disagree
who is the best player on his team.
Correct.
This is all going to be compliments to Villanova for having all these players.
Exactly, yeah. So who do you think is the best player on Villanova?
I think Amari Spellman's the best
player. I think it's Mikal Bridges.
Yeah.
I see Mikal Bridges on the court. It's kind of an eye test thing where, like, the numbers are similar and, you know, they have their own style of play. But I see him moving around and playing good defense, and he rebounds really well, and he can shoot. I mean, they can all shoot, but I don't know. A gut, you know?
I mean, just to point out, Dante DiVincenzo had the best night.
Oh, yeah.
But I think that I think
the and best he won is, six yeah. man of the year.
Yeah.
So, deservedly so.
Well, I think Spellman's the best because, first of all, he's just a freshman, and he's already this good.
Right.
But on top of that, he's listed as a forward, but he's basically a center that can shoot threes. Which is not extremely common.
Which NBA scouts are going to salivate over. Since everyone just, wants to become...
He screams to me, like... He just screams potential. Mm-hmm. And he's already one of the best players in the country.
Yeah.
So, I think he'll be the best player.
I can see that. Well, okay, well, let's...
We're splitting hairs, I think.
Exactly, yeah. And let's talk about the future. Let's go ahead and move on. Congrats to Villanova.
You know, real quick. I am surprised that you have not come at me more about
here's the thing.
Because just a history lesson.
I feel like
I picked Villanova to lose in the second round.
No, I'm aware.
And everybody gave me crap for it, and deservedly so because Villanova ended up winning the national.
It's one of those things where just like I feel bad for you that you've already made such probably the worst sports take of the decade. And I just don't see what me putting you down is gonna benefit you. You know, this is an anti-roast where like. I feel so bad for you.
Sorry.
I'm not. Yeah, I do have a message from my stepdad Raul. He told me to tell you, and I'm gonna say it on the air. He said, "Do me a favor and please don't pick FAU to be successful next year because he does not want you to jinx them." And he said, "Do not hop on the lane train next year because he does not want you to jinx them."
Raul, I'm already on the lane train.
I put him on the lane train. Okay,
like I'm sorry. I will always pick what I believe is the right thing.
Any football team that runs the old Spurs 7 seconds or less offense, but on the football field, has my vote. More points. More points is more fun.
But,
more fun is more life. We have a good time.
To just give myself a quick little very lame. Very lame defense of myself.
Before you keep going, I do think the next time we have Michael or Courtney on, it's going to go in. It could be for...
The roast?
It's going to go. It's going to happen. On how horrible of a sports take you had. Go ahead, continue.
Right, I will not be allowed to... Like, I'm going to relegate myself. When they eventually come on the episode, I'm going to just refuse to talk basketball because I know if I say anything, and this is purely out of love, and if I were them, I'd do the same thing.
Okay.
But if I said anything they disagreed with at any point, they'd be like, yeah, well, you pick Villanova
And that's in my back pocket. Like, we'll talk about the draft and how what you think kind of maybe what the Dolphins should do at 11. And if I don't agree with you, I'll say, yeah, but you know what? You chose Villanova to lose in the second round, so I can't trust your sports opinion. I'm sorry. I don't know how we can continue this sports podcast if you had one of the worst takes of all time.
I'm just going to have to pick the right one next year.
This take is so bad, it makes Christopher Columbus thinking he discovered India look good. That's how bad it was.
Well,
in this situation,
he thought he was given the right context.
This take is so bad, I think Kyrie Earth's flat Earth theory is correct. That's how bad
That is a stretch. All right.
This take is so bad, I want Marcus Morris to take the last shot on the Celtics. Okay,
my quick lame defense that I'm not actually defending myself.
This take is so bad, and I'm sorry, but you deserve to be interrupted here. This take is so bad, I think Will Greer would have done better.
That's lame.
It was a way to bring up Will Greer.
I hate you.
One in episode. You got to have
it.
Go ahead.
To quickly defend myself.
Defend yourself.
I picked Virginia Tech to upset Villanova, and Virginia Tech didn't even play them.
Oh, to put it worse, you bet against Colin Sexton. You bet against Colin Sexton. The universe is wonderful. It just works in mysterious ways, and it just all brings back the good shall be rewarded, the just shall be served and rewarded. It is real wonderful.
Real quick, I'm just gonna look up.
Pull it up.
I'm just gonna pull something up real quick.
Pull it up. I came in fourth in our bracket, if that's what you're looking at.
Oh, yeah, you came in fourth?
I got the alert. Yeah, I came in fourth. Wow. Surprisingly, I thought I was dead last.
I thought you were gonna be dead last.
I thought I was dead last.
See, I was gonna pull that in your face because I thought there was no way that you would beat anybody but dead last.
Me too.
You just didn't have the
points. Me too. I was surprised when I came in fourth.
Congratulations.
Thank you very much. I'm very proud of it. Go ahead and defend yourself.
I continued my trend in Stars brackets go. This happened to all my brackets. This happened every time I've had a bracket.
Okay.
About the Elite Eight,
mm-hmm.
I always have the most possible points remaining. I always pick the Elite Eight pretty well, mm-hmm. but then I always pick the wrong teams to make the Final Four.
And it sucks, it's one game away too.
I picked literally none of the Final Four teams correct.
I got two of the Final Four teams.
But I'm pretty sure I had most of the teams I had going to the Final, all but one of the teams I had going to the Final Four made it at least to the Sweet 16.
No, that's not bad.
So like early on, it's like, you could do really well, and then you don't. This happens to me every year.
Tyler, where'd you end up on our bracket?
Let me find it. Not good.
While you do that, I'm gonna go ahead.
It's not good. I was sixth.
Did I finish better than you?
Yeah, you did.
No way.
Yeah, you did. But that's
oh my god. Yeah. Okay, so first,
I was tied. You were sixth. I was not tied with anybody.
Raul, my stepdad, ended up coming in first. Who is Pace Jamie's?
It's Kelvy.
Our friend of the pod, Kelvy. Good job, second. Courtney, who was in attendance at the Final Four, came in third. Myself in fourth. You came in fifth.
See, I came in sixth.
You came in sixth.
Crap.
Who's triple double?
I think it's Renfro.
Oh, okay, Renfro. And then my mom, love you, mom, came in seventh. okay, let's go ahead and move forward then.
Okay, fine.
Let's talk about next year. I got an alert from ESPN.
Yeah, I would like to move on from this year.
Yes, I would love to move on.
I would like to stop talking about this take.
Mm-hmm.
Watch me. This would be the funniest thing ever. Mm-hmm. Watch me be right about pretty much every bold take I have from this here on out, and you guys will still throw this back in my face.
Yeah, we will. But honestly, though, you might have a point in what you're talking about here. I'm trying to look up this ESPN. They came up with, there it is. ESPN's way too early top 25 for next year. Let's go ahead and go through it.
Yeah, we'll just go through it and see.
First is Kansas, which, honestly, we made fun of Bill Self for not showing up in March and not doing well in the tournament, but his defensive adjustments to this tournament against Duke and then also against Villanova, even though they didn't win and they got blown out, were really nice. Mm-hmm. Looks like Malik Newman is going to come in as a preseason All-American. After he had an amazing tournament. That's if he decides to stay. Mm-hmm. I hope he stays.
This entire list to me is all predicated on everybody that could stay staying.
Exactly. Yeah. It's kind of just,
that's how they do these things.
Yeah.
Building. And that's how I have to look at it, because I don't know who's going to, like, this whole thing is going to change.
Right. Right. But, so right now we got Kansas at one, Duke at number two, headlined by RJ Barrett, Zion Williamson, and Cam Reddish.
Completely disagree with that.
3-5. Me too. Well, I made the case last time, and I said, I think this is the end of the Duke dynasty.
Oh, yeah, and I agree.
I don't think they're going to be able to get that
they'll be production. Good. They'll be good because they're always good in the regular season. Because they're
great players. Yeah, no, talent can take you very far.
They should not be number two.
Right, and they have Quinn Cook will be their senior leader, which hopefully does well. I don't know. Number three is Villanova, like we just talked about.
Too low.
Too low. They should be one, but you know we already talked about and their team.
Now, okay, if they're in a real quick, Villanova's in a situation where they could lose pretty much most of their great players.
Yes,
I don't think they will.
But they're also in a situation where it could be a thing like the 06 Gators team, where they all decide to stay.
Yeah, no, and I think that's probably what's going to happen.
Yeah.
I don't think that's going to happen. I think that it's going to be a middle.
Mm-hmm.
Like two guys will
leave. I think Brunson will leave.
Yeah.
I don't think he should, but I think Brunson will leave. Mikhail Bridges will leave as well. But Spellman will stay, I think.
Yeah.
Like this article suggests. Dante
DiVincenzo.
DiVincenzo. I don't know why I can't say it. Dante DiVincenzo will be staying. When he graduates, I want the Heat to keep an eye on him, because he looks like he's going to be a Shane Battier type player in the league, where he's like the first guy off the bench and he's super productive and he's very disciplined and can produce for an NBA team. I like that. But yeah, no, hopefully. And they also have a 5-star point guard, Javon Quinterly, who was originally committed to Arizona, and then when the whole FBI stuff hit, he decommitted. So hopefully he'll be able to arrive on campus. They just look more stacked. It's just not a bad look. As always, Kentucky in the top 4 at 5. Honestly, go ahead.
Sorry, you.
No, go ahead.
If everybody that's on Kentucky right now decided to stay for another year of development, I would be completely fine with them being this high.
Okay. I
see what you mean. Like, if Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, Kevin Knox, and PG Washington and all them, and they if they stay another year, I would be fine with them being this high, because they're going to be good, because then that's all development, and on top of a good recruiting class.
As always.
But I highly doubt any of them stay.
And also, I respect John Calipari, but John Calipari is the godfather of the one and dones, and I feel like
it's almost like he's not going to let them stay.
Yes, it's more like it's thinking brand over developing players, and maybe that's got something to do with him not being able to develop players to their fullest potential. Because if you look at all their players, if you look at his players at UMass and at Memphis, it's really Derrick Rose that stands out, you know, at Memphis, and it's. He was a generational talent. Like, it's not like he was developing more players, you know?
Yeah.
He's kind of just doing the thing of, like, I'm going to pick the best high school players in the country. You're going to play for a year. We're going to kind of work our way through a year, and then you guys can go cash in. I think it's brand over coaching in his
opinion. Oh, yeah.
So, I have a... Unless,
he's a good coach.
He's good, but I just don't think... Like, and this might be bold, but I think players developing under Mike White will develop better than under John Calipari over a 4-year span.
I think that the programs are different.
The mentality is different.
I think Florida's better, because the moment John Calipari leaves, Kentucky's going to be in shambles for a couple seasons.
Yeah, exactly.
They'll get themselves back because they're Kentucky. Because
they're a blue blood, and they'll get a high profile coach as well. But
like, Florida's in a better spot. A lot of teams are in a better spot right now.
Exactly. Next, we got Auburn at 5.
Overrated.
Agreed.
It's not like I think it was a 1-year wonder. It's just that, like, even when they were healthy, I don't think they were this good.
Right. Next, we got Gonzaga.
Cool.
Which, honestly, I don't know much about.
I have no opinion.
I have no idea. They're
always good.
Okay, this one's to me is interesting. We got Virginia at 7. And I think Virginia, not only will they enter the season with the stigma of being the only team to lose to a 16 seed, but they're losing players. They're losing Isaiah Wilkins and Devon Hall. But it looks like Kyle Guy, Ty Jerome, Jack Salt, DeAndre Hunter will be healthy. Looks like they'll all be there, and they'll all be staying for 2018. And it kind of looks like a "we're not going out this way" mentality.
No, I don't. You know? I think they're going to be right back where they left off.
That's what I'm saying. I
don't think that them losing to a 16 seed says anything about the state of the program.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was just a bad matchup, and the style of basketball that they played did not really let them come back in the game, and they got unlucky.
And the Retrievers played ball.
Yeah, the Retrievers played well, and they didn't. I think Virginia will be almost as good as they were this year.
I agree. I think Virginia should be up higher in this list. I agree. Maybe over Kentucky or Auburn, teams that we really don't rate high. Tennessee coming in at 8.
I'm pretty sure
they had a good year.
I'm pretty sure they're bringing back everybody.
That's the thing, yeah.
I have no problem with them being up high in the top 10, because I don't think they lose like anybody important.
Mm-hmm. Number 9, North Carolina. They'll be losing Joel Berry II, a North Carolina basketball legend, as people have been saying. But Cameron Johnson, that's the big question. He averaged 12.5 points a game, and if he comes back, they'll be a stronger team. If not, then we'll have to see where they go.
Luke May is still on the team, so that's what's important.
And rounding out the top 10 is Nevada, who I didn't know much about going into the tournament.
I knew nothing about Nevada.
But, they're here. I think we should just call it a top 10.
We can just list
the rest. List off the rest. 11 is Michigan State. 12 will be Michigan. 13 will be West Virginia. 14 come in us at the Florida Gators. Okay, let's pause at the Gators.
Okay.
And we'll talk a little about the Gators. We're losing Chioza, we're losing Igor, and we're losing
Egbunu,
who technically isn't a loss.
On top of that, Jalen Hudson is testing the waters for the NBA draft.
Exactly. He has declared for the NBA draft, but he has not hired an agent. So what that means is that he can go to work out, go to the combine, have meetings with teams and stuff on his own. And if he feels like, he has a chance of if he feels like it's worth it going into the draft and foregoing his eligibility, then he can do so then. But if he feels like it's not worth it, he can come back to school and he can take another year, and then afterwards he can declare and do his thing next year. I hope that's what happens, not only because he'll be one of those leaders next year. He knows the Mike White system. He knows how we work here. But also I think it'll improve his draft stock. I think without Chiosa and I think without Igor, he will be that leader to our young players coming in. He'll be that leader out on the wing.
Hudson needs to learn some consistency. That's the biggest flaw in his game, is that he's not consistent. So I think there's certain things when players declare. This isn't an issue that happens in the NBA more than it does in NFL and college, because in football, a lot of times it's like you don't want to go through another season of just extreme wear and tear.
Right. Yeah. Running backs, get out of there as soon as you can.
But with NBA players, it's a matter of what is the flaws in your game that returning could fix? Because sometimes there are some that you're not going to gain anything by going there another year. Right. So unless
which is why that these meetings with NBA teams are so valuable.
Well, yeah, and I think Jalen Hudson's main issue is he's not consistent, and that's something that another year in college could fix. Yeah.
I think if he can put a team on his back like Chiosa did last year, it'll impress NBA scouts and it'll help his draft stock next year.
My opinion on this ranking, just because we'll stop here for this one, I think it's a little bit high.
Really? Let's look at the teams ranked behind us, and let's see where we think they'll go. Yeah. Syracuse at 15, Virginia Tech at 16, Loyola Chicago at 17. Look at them. Way to go.
Look at them.
Clemson 18, Kansas State 19, LSU 20, TCU 21, Butler 22, who comes to the Swamp next year, comes to the O-Dome next year. Florida State 23.
No, they don't. We go visit them.
I thought it was the other way around.
Michigan State comes to the
O-Dome. You're right. I'm so sorry. But we play them next year regardless. Yeah. Florida State 23, Purdue 24, and 25 with Oregon rounding out. Now, here's where I think. I think Florida State should be ranked higher. I think Butler should be ranked higher. And I'm going to have to agree with you. I think maybe it is, after reading the rest of the teams, I think it may be a little too high. I like Virginia Tech above us. And honestly, if we're being realistic and we're just taking what we saw in this tournament, Loyola Chicago, a team that beat us at home last year, deserves to be ahead of us in the way that they play. I'm not saying that they deserve to be in the top 10 or something, but I think that maybe if they're 16 and we're 18, I'm not mad at that. You know?
Yeah, I would I agree with that, because we've talked about it before, but I don't know too much about our players that are coming in, our freshmen. I don't know.
Right.
I've heard really good things about them, but it's a matter of we lost. It's what we lost.
Yeah.
We lose Chris Chiosa.
We lost a top five Gator of all time.
Mm-hmm.
We lost Igor, who was consistent in showing up, you know, with the exception of a few games late.
Consistent rebounder.
Exactly.
A very serious contributor.
Exactly. Kayvon went ghost last year, but we know what he can be. But will he become what his potential is? Keith Stone showed great flashes last year of having amazing potential, but will he be able to replicate that on a consistent basis? It's the same thing that we talked about Jalen Hudson. Can these players do it night in, night out? Can they do it on a Tuesday in Baton Rouge? Can they do it on a Saturday traveling to Butler? You know what I mean? Can they respond in these situations?
I mean, I'm high on a lot of the freshmen that played
this
year.
Me too. We looked at those tapes the other week.
I'm high on the incoming freshmen. I'm high on the players that will be sophomores.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I just feel like to start the season.
Right. Yeah.
I don't know if we're the 14th best team. Are we in the top 25? Certainly. Yeah. But I don't think we're the 14th best team.
I agree. I'd have to agree with you. Do you have anything else to say about next year's?
My one takeaway is that I'm just LSU is on this list at 20.
LSU's on this list, yes.
I wouldn't have thought of that. I get it because Will Wade is a coach that people like, but I just personally don't see it. They have a lot of recruits coming in.
Right. They're talking about Naziron Reed and Emmett Williams, two five-star front court players. So it kind of looks like they're going size and trying to beat you on the interior, which will be trouble for us.
The recruiting class is currently ranked 5th. Yeah. So if you can put it together, I could see it. But I wouldn't have ranked LSU.
I'd have to agree.
At the top.
So. Maybe it's just the perception, you know?
Oh, man, maybe.
And who knows? Maybe they bring in these top recruits, and it ends up being a Ben Simmons situation where we know he's a generational talent, but they couldn't find a way to
do anything with him.
Yeah. All right. Well, that's all of our college basketball talk today.
Actually, I remembered something as we were starting. We need to talk about the women's basketball.
Yes, we do. Oh my lord!
Because it was insane.
Oh my gosh!
I watched every game.
Notre Dame pulling out the wins.
Yeah, Notre Dame beat. Can we talk about how like this? So this last UConn team, Gino Arriana's UConn teams, the last 2 years have gone, I believe, 70-2, and they are with. Yeah, it's 72-2, and not won a national championship in the last 2 years.
And they've lost.
They lost to Mississippi State
in the final four
last year.
And they lost to Notre Dame in overtime.
Yeah.
I'm
so sad, by the way.
Yeah. Okay. So we'll start with the title game then. Let's start with the title game, which was on Sunday. Notre Dame beat Mississippi State in regulation, 61-58, on a last second three pointer. It was written in the stars. It was great. It was outstanding.
It was amazing.
But we feel bad for our fellow SEC teams who have lost in the championship game in back-to-back years.
It's just so. I wrote an article about this for ESPN Gainesville.
We'll go ahead and link that in our description.
But this was the best season in Mississippi State's history. Mm-hmm. The thing that made me root for them is that unlike all these other teams. Like, and then they got to the national championship last year, but this was the best. They went undefeated in the regular season. They had one blemish in the SEC tournament. But then they beat their opponents by an average of, like, 24
points
a game.
They dominated the tournament.
And they pulled out a really tight win against Louisville the game before. Mm-hmm. And it's just, in that moment, like, a fantastic shot by Arike Ogunbowale to like, an off-platform three as the buzzer beater went off as she sang it through the
air.
Kobe-esque to win Notre Dame its title. But I just could not help but feel bad for Mississippi State, who had all those seniors and had the best season in school history.
Yeah.
And came up so close.
Mississippi State still missing a national title in all of their sports at school. They came so close 2 years in a row. Mississippi State as a university has not won a national title in any of their team sports. They've come so close twice.
And
we feel for our fellow SEC school.
I follow some Mississippi State football players on Twitter. Like, I follow Nick Fitzgerald.
Right.
And you can tell just by following like the one person, like that university was in love with that women's basketball team.
Oh yeah,
that meant everything.
They get numbers at their games.
They had consistently over 9,000.
They were up 30-17 at halftime.
Yep. But I mean, this
the game is yeah. four quarters. The game is four quarters.
Yeah, the women's Final Four was great. Final Four games went to overtime.
Yes, this was the first time that both Final Four games went to overtime for the women's tournament. And if I'm being realistic, I think people need to throw away the stigma that women's basketball is not as good as men's basketball. You may have your preference, but I think the quality of the sport is at a high level amongst these high-level women's teams.
I relate it
to the MLS, which I will get to in a minute when we talk soccer. But
yeah, well, I would say that The difference is that the women's basketball at the top, the women's Final Four and the women's basketball at the top is better, is as good or better than the men's. The issue that comparing them is that there is parity in women's basketball is not as great as it is in men's basketball.
Yes.
Men's basketball, part of the reason we love the tournaments is that there's so many upsets, but women's doesn't have upsets. The one seeds made the tournament.
All the one seeds made it to the Final Four.
All the one seeds made the Final Four, and most of them in dramatic fashion.
And they went to both games went to overtime. They were good games.
So, like the women's Final Four, the product in that regard is that those three games, you are getting the four of like the six or seven best teams every year.
Those teams
don't get upset.
Right. Going to the women's Final Four in attendance is probably one of the best gambles you can make for watching high quality basketball.
Yeah.
You know.
Still, as an overall season to season product, men's is certainly more popular, but probably better quality.
Right.
But I think the gap it's closing. It's gonna it might not ever close fully, but I love women's basketball.
Me
I
too.
Think
it's, this it's a great, this I'm gonna be
what I love about it is that it's almost a different sport because the strategy that you have to play because of the strategy and the way the teams play the games is different because you don't. Women's bodies and the way they use their height and everything and the way they shoot the ball and everything, it's all different.
Mm-hmm.
And it adds a level that like is not really apparent. Like when you watch women's hockey and women's mm-hmm. soccer, it's like it's not really any different.
Well,
it's
just, yeah, women exactly. And I would just say the only thing is women's soccer is just more physical. That's just because they're just more physical.
Like, that's just the way it is.
When I grew up playing club soccer, we'd play the women's team of our same age group, and they were much more physical than we were. And we kind of had this thing where, you know, you're 13, 14-year-old boys. You're like, do I shoulder up with them? What do you do? And then 5 minutes of the game, you go, oh, no, yeah, we got to get physical. Because they were throwing us off the ground. Yeah. And like what you were saying, that change from men's basketball to women's basketball, the body is used differently and stuff. I'm going to just – before we move on and before we acknowledge it, I was not a big watcher of women's basketball. And I hadn't watched a Final Four in years prior. And it wasn't until I saw this. I read a couple of Shea Serrano articles on The Ringer talking about the women's tournament. I recommend them. You should go read them. And it kind of drew me in. And then you talked about how you're going to watch the Final Four. And I was like, okay, I'll watch some of the games. And I ended up watching the end of the Notre Dame-UConn game in the Final Four. I did not watch the Louisville-Mississippi State game, but I went and watched the extended highlights. And then I watched the first three quarters of the national championship of Notre Dame-Mississippi State. And it was – honestly, it was not – the stigma of it boring or not being good enough, or whatever. It was good. It was basketball.
Very entertaining.
It was very entertaining. Good basketball. And I feel like that's why I want.
I wish that, like, that's why I wish for more parity. Like here at Florida, it's kind of a joke at the University of Florida. Well, to me, then to me and a couple other people, that women's basketball is the only sport at the University of Florida that has never won a conference championship.
Oh, okay.
Which it's kind of a joke in that like. Women's basketball has not really ever been like really that good here, so therefore it's not really popular. I wish that it shows with schools that have really good teams like Mississippi State
and South Carolina
and South Carolina like,
two
like,
in our own people, backyard in our conference.
People go to those games.
Yeah. UConn games
and people watch the games. So I wish more teams were better.
I agree.
Yeah, but moving on.
With that said, congratulations to Notre Dame. We feel for you, Mississippi State. We hope to get this kind of excitement next year, and
we might
want to keep an eye on the Gators women's team. We should make more of an effort. We really should. It's important, and I think
they had a really bad season.
Yeah,
but,
no, they did. Well, first year head coach.
First year head coach, there were clearly signs of improvement.
Exactly. One more women's sport that we talk about here a lot is gymnastics.
Yep.
Tyler, what do you have to say about gymnastics?
Gymnastics first round of the postseason begins. Well, I mean, postseason, post-conference tournament, conference championships and everything.
The NCAA championship.
The NCAA playoffs, basically, begin this weekend. Gators are in the Penn State Regional. Mm-hmm. They're the 5 overall seed. And it's going to be fun because I personally love watching gymnastics.
Mm-hmm.
But it's really great because there's a lot of teams that get in it. But, yeah, fill out your bracket. Fill out your gymnastic bracket. I'm still trying to figure out how it works. Yeah.
But yeah, shout out to gymnastics.
They're gonna be great. They're gonna win a national championship.
Yes.
Hot take.
Although honestly, it won't be hot. It would just be.
Well, they almost won SECs if they did. If one of their players, if one of the gymnasts doesn't fall like on a floor routine.
True.
So like that tells me that they could win.
Right.
I'm not just saying that because I have friends on the team.
Well, good plug for that. Make sure you check that out. Tyler, I really wanted to talk a little bit of soccer today. I want to take this last segment that we have, and I want to kind of give everyone what you need to know, because the World Cup is coming, and in order to be kind of well-versed with the World Cup, you got to watch some club soccer, and the best club tournament in the world is the UEFA Champions League. It takes the best teams in Europe, and they play each other to determine a champion. This week begins the first leg of the quarterfinals. And today already we saw Real Madrid beat Juventus 3-0 in the first leg, which means they're pretty comfortably in the semifinals. And we saw Bayern Munich beat Sevilla in the first leg, which means they're kind of comfortable in the semifinals because they have two away goals. In the CONCACAF Champions League, now that's the same Champions League that they play in Europe, except that they bring it over in the United States and they take, North America, and they take the best teams in North America. An MLS team has never won the title.
Really?
Yes, it's been Mexican clubs for the last 8 years. And so what we have here is a chance for an MLS team to win that title and to improve the stock of the league. Toronto FC is arguably the best team in MLS history. This team right here, last year they won the treble. They won the MLS Cup, which is like the Super Bowl of MLS. the Supporters' Shield, which is awarded to the team with the most points at the end of the regular season, and then their Canadian champion, the Canadian Champion Cup, which means the teams in Canada play for a title. That's called the treble. They won the max amount of trophies they could win. So because they won their Canadian championship, they represent Canada in the CONCACAF Champions League. So we're in the semifinals. We got the first leg starting tonight. So we got Toronto FC playing at home against Club America, the most decorated and famous club in Mexico. And on the other side of the bracket, we have the New York Red Bulls playing Chivas Guadalajara tomorrow night as well in a two-legged affair. So keep an eye out on that. The winner of that tournament takes them to the Club World Cup, which allows them to play the best team in South America, the best team in Europe, best team in Asia. It's a very international championship. They play every December. So keep an eye out for that. What I really want to talk about as well, though, is the Champions League. Tomorrow, we have Barcelona playing Roma, and then you have Liverpool playing Manchester City. Now, for those of you who have not seen soccer in this entire year, I recommend that you watch this Liverpool-Manchester City game. Now, why? When Barcelona's playing on the other one, and we got Messi over there, blah, blah, blah. I get it. Watch Liverpool-Man City. Man City's been managed by this guy named Pep Guardiola. Pep Guardiola is, think of him as the tactical mastermind of soccer right now. He was going back to that whole thing, and I was talking about total soccer. It's about space. It's about pouncing on the ball. It's about being creative.
He's the Chip Kelly of soccer.
He's the Chip Kelly of soccer.
He's revolutionizing
it. Revolutionizing it. If England win the World Cup, it is because of what Pep Guardiola is doing with Manchester City. He is training these English players to go in and become great on the ball, and you can even see that style translated to the national team. So I highly recommend watching that. Keep an eye out for that game, and then maybe next week we can talk a little bit more. I just want to give an overview.
Where can I watch it?
You can watch Liverpool-Manchester City on Fox Sports 1 at 2:45 Eastern tomorrow.
All right.
Yes, you can do that. You're welcome.
Me and the people's
name. You and the viewers. And one more thing on soccer I want to talk about. This is the United States, and I am a noted MLS fan. But let me clarify things. It's not the MLS. Because what you're saying is the Major League Soccer. It's already a league. So just because it's MLS. It's Major League Soccer. We say the NBA, but like it shouldn't be the NBA. Or the NFL, but it shouldn't be. Because it's just the National Football League. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It's already in the title. So it's MLS, not the MLS. Just to clarify.
All right. Are you okay?
I am. I just want to ask you a question. Can you name me five soccer players? Any soccer player in the world right now?
In the world?
Yeah, name me five.
Christian Pulisic, Landon Donovan, Cristiano Ronaldo, Lionel Messi, Zlatan Ibrahimovic.
Oh, who's that fifth one?
Zlatan Ibrahimovic.
Oh, wonderful. So he just joined a team called the Los Angeles Galaxy, and Los Angeles Galaxy just played in the first ever what they're calling El Tráfico. Now, this is the derby, which is a rivalry game, between the brand new expansion team, LAFC, and Los Angeles Galaxy. They're calling it El Tráfico because
quick question, because I don't know anything about this. What does FC stand for in soccer?
Football club.
Okay, so is it just basically the difference between, like, university and, like, university state?
Yes.
It's basically university and state university. It's just nomenclature.
Just nomenclature, okay, yeah. Cool. So, for example, Orlando...
I've been wondering that for a very long time.
Exactly. So, Orlando City is Orlando City SC, which stands for soccer club.
Okay.
But you have Toronto FC, so football club. Yeah. It's just traditional names.
I understand.
Yeah, So
LA Galaxy.
LA Galaxy were down 3-0 at halftime against, or 3-0 in the second half against their brand new rivals, LAFC. And then LA Galaxy went up. They got a goal back. It was 3-1. And then in the 70th minute, the fans start chanting, "We want Zlatan," because he recently signed with LA Galaxy. He comes on. They score another goal. And then they're at 3-2. And then 4 minutes after Zlatan comes in, 4 minutes, he has a 40-yard rocket that lands into the goal to tie it 3-3. Now, Tyler, I know you saw this game.
Oh, yeah.
I know you saw this.
I saw this moment. Goal.
As a non-soccer nut like I feel, like I am, how did this goal make you feel?
I was beyond amazed. I am beyond amazed when soccer players make these goals because it is something – it's – first of all, it's just an epic moment, like when you just watch it because you know, like you hear about what's at stake, and like just to see it happen, it's an epic moment. But to just the skill it takes to like, the ball didn't even like hit the ground. He just jumped up and kicked it.
He volleyed
40
it.
Yards.
Yep, into the back of the net
completely accurately. Mm-hmm. And I am beyond amazed that people ability. I mean, like, soccer players, extremely, it impressed me extremely when they score.
Yeah, 100%. And then later on, in the 91st, 92nd minute, Zlatan scores the game winner with his head, and they finish the comeback 4-3 in what is arguably the greatest game in MLS history. Now, before we stop talking about it.
A lot of games.
I know,
But, like, I trust you on this.
And the thing is, like, I thought that when I saw it, but I've only been seriously watching MLS for, like, 4 years. And then these people I follow on Twitter that have been following the league since the beginning said, this might be the best game. They said, we're in greatest MLS game ever territory. And when these people start saying that, I have to take their word. Because they know better than me. And, you know, they've seen those other games. So, what I want to finish with this soccer segment is this. The World Cup is coming up this summer. Unfortunately, the United States is not in it. I have reconciled, I have closure, I have accepted it, and I'm going to watch it because I love the game. MLS is the league in the United States, and I will submit and I will acknowledge that it is clearly not at the quality of the Premier League in England or La Liga in Spain or the Bundesliga in Germany. I completely understand that, but it's not horrible soccer. There's this stigma that players come over here and it's a retirement league and that the game is played slower and that the game is the quality is not as good. And to that, I say no. The influx of young players in this league is what's improving the quality of play. If you look at a team like Atlanta, you have Miguel Almirón, you have Yamil Assad who's playing in DC, you have Josue Coleman in Orlando. You have Diego Rossi in LAFC. You have all these young players from South America that are coming up and are establishing themselves in the game and changing the way the game is played. 5 years ago, that league is horrible. 3 years ago, the league is better, but it's different than what it's at now. So what I'm telling you is, just like we enjoy watching high school basketball, and then we enjoy college basketball, and then we enjoy the NBA, and we understand that the NBA is the best quality, doesn't mean that we can't enjoy the other things. You know?
Yeah, I'm a huge believer in that.
Yeah,
too,
and you have to realize that MLS is only 23, 24 years old.
That's pretty young.
These leagues in Europe have been around for hundreds of years, so you can't really do it justice and compare. You know, we're trying our best, and all I'm saying is embrace it because it's a great blend of traditional soccer culture and putting that American spin on it with our playoffs and with our weird, quirky ways of our rules and stuff. And if you give it a chance, it's a great time, and I feel like it's going to be even better when you realize that you're watching some of the players that you're watching in MLS actually do end up on World Cup squads, and you can see them in the summer and things like that. And every once in a while, you'll get that Zlatan rocket, yeah. And that's what it's all about.
I'll have to watch it sometime.
Yeah.
It is on soccer or football. Mm-hmm. It is on the list with rugby, with sports that I need to learn.
Exactly. I would hope that soccer is higher on that
list.
No,
it is. rugby's just interesting to me.
Rugby's cool, yeah. I've seen a few games on
soccer's more important sport. Yeah. So.
Exactly. You're looking for league stuff, this weekend on Saturday at 7:30 in the morning on NBC Sports Network, you have the Merseyside Derby, which is Liverpool against Everton. And then at 12:30, you have the Manchester Derby, which is Manchester City against Manchester United. And Manchester City, if they beat Manchester United, will win the Premier League at home against their biggest rivals. It's looking nice. And for United, we know the league is the City has won the league, but it's a matter of keeping your dignity and not being the team that allows them to win it.
Realize you said 7:30 a.m. on a Saturday.
I know, and that's...
So I'm not watching that one.
Okay, you can watch the Manchester one at 12:30, yeah. But that's my soccer thing right now. Play FIFA, go kick a ball around, watch the World Cup this summer. When the World Cup comes around, I do want to do...
Oh, we're watching it.
We're watching it, and I want to do a little preview, and I want to kind of dissect, give you like a soccer for dummies thing of like what to watch
please
for
do,
with each team.
Do. Real quick question regarding soccer for dummies, because I've actually never found this out.
Mm-hmm.
What's the system that players get into the MLS, like in, as far as like from high school to like college? How does that work?
So right now there's a big debate because the U.S. missed out on the World Cup. There's a big wave how we develop our youth, saying that we need better players. So right now there's a better way. There's multiple ways of getting to MLS. There is each MLS team has what they call development academy, where they have academies where they have kids basically play club soccer, but they play as a part of the MLS club. They have youth ranks, and you can move up and graduate to the senior team and sign your contract there. You can go to college and then declare for the MLS draft.
So there is a draft.
There is a draft, yeah, which is not as popular as
before. I would not imagine. There's
also a secondary league called USL, United Soccer League, which has partnership with MLS, and some MLS teams have actually secondary clubs. So for example, New York.
It's like baseball with the, like.
With the minor league, yeah. So you can be drafted in the MLS draft, and they can send you to the USL team to develop for a year, and then the next year they can graduate you to the senior team kind of thing.
Okay.
So it works in multiple ways.
People don't know. And, like,
and honestly, it's very complicated. And if you want to learn about it, it's something you got to dive into. But as a general note, you can do that. People like Christian Pulisic. Pulisic played for his local club team, and then they scouted him, and then he went away. He was lucky because he had a European passport, and he was able to travel abroad with that passport and was able to live in Germany and train with Dortmund, and now he plays for Dortmund at 19 years old. But those are special cases, you know? Yeah. You have great players that come out of college. Jeff Cameron, he was a starting center back for the U.S. national team. He plays for Stoke in the Premier League. He went to college. He was drafted by Houston Dynamo in MLS, and then from there they sold him to Europe. So, like, there is pathways. You can get your different ways, and it's good. And soccer is a great way to gain scholarships.
This is fascinating to me. So
yeah, it's deep, and we got to cut it short.
Yeah, basketball's over, so I'm going to have to, like, learn more about this.
100%. Yeah, 100%. But with that being said, I guess that's all we got to talk about today. Kind of a unique episode.
Yeah, kind of a hodgepodge, unique
episode. Hodgepodge, yeah, nice little thing. Tyler, next week, what are we talking about? What are we talking about next week?
Well, we are talking about, we're previewing the spring game.
Yes, which is next Saturday.
Sounds lame. But we're going to be talking about Gator spring football, basically.
I got one question. When's the natty?
When is it?
When is the natty?
Well, it's typically in January.
Okay. Let's book our tickets now because I'm convinced we're winning.
It's in Atlanta. It's in Atlanta.
Just don't even play the season. Like, let's just go.
Just give it to us.
Yeah, I'll be in Charleston. There's a 5-hour drive for me.
I'll be here.
It's a 5-hour drive for you. We can meet in the middle. We can meet there. No, but yeah, next week we're previewing the spring game, and then we'll also be starting our NFL draft preview.
Yeah, we dive into it a little bit.
Tyler is kind of a draft nut, so he'll give us some information.
I wouldn't say a draft nut. I like it.
Okay, all right.
Okay, fine. Well, like, I like the NFL draft. I am not a draft analyst. I don't overthink it like all these people.
You are not Mel Kiper Jr.
I think it's super interesting.
Yeah, I have to agree.
Part of the reason that I asked about the MLS draft, because I think drafts in general is super interesting.
Yes. Yeah.
Might be the one person watching the MLS draft.
I actually streamed it live. I was cooking.
I will be streaming it with you because I love that kind
of
stuff.
I'll show you and I'll tell you, you know, you get to know the college player. Anyway, okay, enough soccer talk. Next week we'll be back with the spring game preview. We'll be talking a little bit about the NFL draft that's coming up at the end of the month. But without further ado, I guess that's it, right, Tyler?
That's it for me.
All right, man. My name is Sergio.
My name is Tyler.
And we're not biased, but go Gators.
Go Gators.